Hi, this is Marco Pimentel. Welcome to the podcast, Someone Like You. In this first season, you'll discover founders, creators, entrepreneurs, and business owners who are passionate about creating business models with lasting, sustainable climate solutions.
Hydrogen is emerging as one of the solutions here is some of what I was just talking about, which is there's zero tailpipe emissions in those vehicles, and it's a much better solution as an energy carrier in commercial vehicles and a number of other circumstances. But it's also a well-recognized molecule that can be produced and is produced in abundant amounts in various environments today. One of the ironies of the energy industry is that there's a huge amount of hydrogen that's used in the refining of oil into gasoline. That hydrogen could potentially be used to fuel vehicles instead.
Hydrogen. When we think about clean energy, we often think of electric cars, solar panels, wind turbines, and the like to power a grid that is charging a lot of batteries. But batteries are extremely heavy. Large passenger planes, industrial processes, industrial equipment, and shipping likely won't find a solution with batteries. Hydrogen has been mentioned as the clean energy source of the future. It's actually been used around for a long time, actually over 150 years. The first hydrogen fuel cell was created by General Electric. But why now? The market demand is strong and the price for renewable energy has been drastically reduced, thus making green hydrogen a viable solution. There are various types of hydrogen, from green, which is created by renewable electricity, blue, which is created by natural gas and steam, and gray, the most popular, which uses natural gas or methane to produce hydrogen, not a very climate-friendly option. And that brings me to this week's episode. Joining me is Ben Nyland, President and CEO at Loop Energy. Loop Energy is an industry-leading developer, manufacturer, and supplier of hydrogen fuel cell systems to vehicle and power generation system manufacturers around the world. At Loop Energy, the mission is to accelerate the hydrogen revolution and power a cleaner future with their signature patent technology known as eFlow. eFlow ensures uniform current and power density, increasing gas velocity down its trapezoid plate to deliver up to 90% more peak power, 16% lower fuel consumption, and up to 10 times better current density uniformity. Prior to joining Loop Energy, Ben spent 10 years in a variety of senior management positions and 3 years as Loop Energy's VP of Operations. As president since 2015 and CEO since 2016, Ben is responsible for the company's strategic planning, corporate leadership, market expansion, and managing key partner relationships. Here is our conversation. Ben, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Marco. Really appreciate you inviting me.
I would love to just start by understanding a little bit what drew you to Loop Energy, as in, you know, kind of, was it a background role? Was it education that led you to Loop Energy?
Well, I joined Loop about 10 years ago, and it was at a point in my career that I was really looking for an opportunity to enter a difference-making role in a company that was going to make a huge difference. I think to understand that, I need to know a little bit about my career before Loop. I started almost 30 years ago in the technology sector and software and internet. I had a computer engineering degree, worked through the dot-com boom of the 90s, very much enjoyed the startup and growth aspects of that, but realized in the mid-2000s that I wanted to be involved in industries that created more of a legacy and something I could look back on and be proud of in my retirement years. And so moved over into the clean energy space at that time, initially with a wind energy company. But then I was introduced to the founder of Loop Energy as a fuel cell company. I didn't know anything about fuel cells, but it really sort of scratched the itch I was looking for, in the sense that it's a clean energy technology. And after looking at it for about 6 months and working through some projects with the founder on contract, realized that it wasn't just a science project. There were real applications, and that this was a technology that could be put into products in a reasonably short period of time and really make a positive impact on the world. And so I joined Loop as VP Operations, really supporting the founder in figuring out how to productize this technology. And that was just over 10 years ago, November 1st, 2012. And then over time, got to know the business better, was promoted to president, and then ultimately in 2016 was put into the role of CEO, and have been running the commercialization since then. And I have to say that that first impression and expectation I had of this being a not just a science project, but a real opportunity to make a difference has proven to be true. So I'm every bit as excited about it today as I was when I first encountered this almost 11 years ago.
What you know, obviously thinking about, you know, climate and climate focused companies have been all around for many years, and this is not just now that we are in a bit of a climate emergency. But years ago, it wasn't talked about as much as it, of course, it is today. So what were the things that were kind of going through your mind when you were thinking about getting into something that was working on a solution that could help, you know, industries change? You know, that you mentioned you started Loop at 10 years ago, but you're at a wind company before that too. So what were the things that you were seeing or finding or that kind of drew you to this?
Well, look, Marco, I think you hit the nail on the head. There's been an awareness of this for many years. I mean, I just the other day saw a video on LinkedIn from 1990 of Carl Sagan talking about global warming was the language at that stage, not climate change. And we know that, you know, the oil industry companies have been aware of this since the 70s. And so there's been this awareness, growing awareness over the last several decades. But I would really say that, you know, in the late 90s, early 2000s was when there started to be a sense of urgency around climate change, around clean technologies. And it was still a sense of urgency that I would describe as, you know, technology driven as opposed to market pull, meaning technologies that exist to provide clean solutions to the world in the 2000s were really trying to convince end users of their benefits and why they needed to be adopted. So for people that were aware of this, the need was evident and the need for solutions to get into the market was evident as well. And so I think that's what was really driving me at the time. I just had my second of three children, and so was recognizing that, starting to think about things like, you know, I want my contribution to make the world a better place for them. You know, when they're older, I want to be able to look them in the eye and say, hopefully the world's a better place because of what we've done. If there's still challenges, be able to say that, you know, I've been doing my part to contribute to the world being a better place. So all of these things really coalesced for me, and my wife at the same time. My wife also at first part of her career was as an engineer, and she made the decision to go back to law school, get her degree. She now works as an environmental lawyer. So both of us just really had a degree of success in the first part of our career in software and internet, and made the decision that we wanted to contribute in a different area. And that decision sort of happened around the mid-2000s.
So to get into Loop, Loop Energy, how does Loop Energy kind of contribute to the energy sector and in a clean energy sector? So just to kind of give a broad overview of what Loop Energy is, its mission, and what you're working on to put to market.
Yeah. So look, we have two sort of corporate taglines at Loop. One is more power to move you, and the other is the engine driving zero emissions. And so, you know, your listeners will be familiar with zero emissions as a concept, talking about vehicles. It's usually used when talking about battery electric cars and these sorts of things. So Loop is in the business of building fuel cell engines for commercial vehicles. So those sorts of vehicles would be buses, medium and heavy duty trucks. We manufacture those engines here in Vancouver. We ship them to customers around the world from China to Europe. And those zero emission fuel cell engines use hydrogen as a fuel. And the way in which that hydrogen is consumed means that the only byproduct of that reaction is water and a little bit of heat. And so it really makes possible a zero emission vehicle that's larger than a car. And the reason this is important is because it's very difficult to power large vehicles with batteries. And so our mission, if you will, is to make sure as many commercial vehicles, trucks, buses, et cetera, around the world are converting to zero emissions so that those tailpipe emissions are reduced substantially, because the tailpipe emissions from transportation are a massive contributor to the carbon emissions that are causing climate change.
And so for, you know, I think it would be great to get into more so hydrogen itself, and then we can kind of get into more about the products itself too. But my understanding simply is, you know, you see these ranges on these electric cars or electric trucks, they've improved to 500, 700 kilometers per charge. But when you get into semi-trucks or excavators or big buses where, you know, they're driving around all day, the issue being that it's just batteries, the whole, you know, just you need too many batteries in order to be able to make those work. Is that where hydrogen fits in quite nicely?
Yeah, I think there are a few operational characteristics of batteries that make them challenging for those heavier vehicles. And it's actually interesting that there's a sort of a parallel in internal combustion vehicles. You'll note, especially in North America, that most cars run on gasoline, but most heavy-duty vehicles run on diesel. And it's because of the characteristics of diesel to get more mileage, better efficiency in those bigger vehicles. And that parallel exists in the clean energy space as well. So when you look at batteries, batteries tend to be very heavy and they take time to recharge. So the way you refuel a battery electric car is by plugging it into a charger of some sort and recharging those batteries. And so those are very convenient for people that have houses and can plug their vehicles in overnight, that are not traveling very far, they're maybe commuting to and from work, or they have sometimes longer range requirements, but they can take the time to recharge those batteries. That's all very effective and useful for consumer vehicles. But when you look at the needs of a commercial vehicle, whether it's a bus or a truck, often those vehicles are traveling much longer ranges. They often need to work for more than one shift. And so the prospect of having that vehicle stop work for 2 to 3 hours to recharge the batteries has a significant negative impact on the business proposition of that vehicle. And then the other piece of it is that batteries are quite heavy. And so you're talking about, in the case of a semi-tractor trailer, several tons of batteries that are required for that vehicle to operate properly. And then you're faced with a very difficult decision of, okay, what do we do then? Do we increase the allowable curb weight of those vehicles, which is going to create a lot more wear and tear on our roads and result in greater costs? Or do we keep the curb weight the same? And that limits the amount of cargo that those vehicles can carry around. And so all of these compromises to the operation of the vehicle mean that battery electric vehicles are having a very difficult time penetrating the commercial vehicle market because the fleet operators are having to compromise their business. The benefit of fuel cells is they're much lighter than batteries, and so you don't have that cargo compromise. And to refuel a fuel cell system, you just have to refill a hydrogen tank, which takes about 10 minutes, maybe 20 minutes for really big vehicles, but it's very comparable to today's diesel refueling times, which means those vehicles can move the same amount of cargo and operate the same number of hours per day. And so by incorporating a fuel cell, you actually meet the economic requirements of commercial vehicles. And this is the reason why we're seeing so much uptake in the fuel cell space around commercial vehicles.
And hydrogen has been around for years. So I would love to understand kind of why now, and then understand just hydrogen as a fuel. How is it produced? How is it climate friendly? And then, you know, a little bit about the infrastructure. There's a lot of questions there, but if we can start with just the why now, and I would love to get into that.
Yeah, so the why now I think is really important because, you know, there was a push on hydrogen and fuel cells 20 years ago, and it didn't really go anywhere. It was focused on cars. But I think this goes back to a comment I made earlier about the difference between technology trying to push itself as a solution versus the market pull, because the market has recognized there's a problem that has to be solved. And today what we're seeing in a number of jurisdictions is that market pull. And the market pull is being created by two very strong forces. So one of those forces is climate change. And there has been a dramatic increase in the resources and the recognition that climate change needs to be addressed now versus 20 years ago. We're seeing billions and billions of dollars being allocated across multiple economies to address climate change specifically by producing hydrogen. And so that sort of market pull, where fleet operators are recognizing that they need to move, governments are recognizing that they need to make these mandates, simply did not exist until the last couple of years. And so that's generating a tremendous amount of pull. The reason why hydrogen is emerging as one of the solutions here is some of what I was just talking about, which is there's zero tailpipe emissions in those vehicles, and it's a much better solution as an energy carrier in commercial vehicles and in a number of other circumstances. But it's also a well-recognized molecule that can be produced and is produced in abundant amounts in various environments today. So one of the ironies of the energy industry is that there's a huge amount of hydrogen that's used in the refining of oil into gasoline. That hydrogen could potentially be used to fuel vehicles instead. And so that's production of hydrogen is something that is well understood. It's been happening for many years. It's been happening in ways that are perhaps more carbon intense than what we want to see as we go forward. But the production and handling of hydrogen is a well-known process. And so building and scaling that hydrogen production is a matter of commitment of resources and build out of infrastructure, which takes time, but not really technology development, which is great. When we talk about hydrogen in particular, a lot of the discussion these days is around carbon intensity. And sometimes people use different colors of hydrogen to try to represent that intensity, whether it's brown hydrogen, which tends to come from the reforming of natural gas. The reason why it's called brown or gray hydrogen is because it actually releases carbon dioxide into the atmosphere, and so it is not the best source of hydrogen, and some of that cleanness is you know, removed from the equation, or blue hydrogen where the carbon is captured, or green hydrogen, which comes from electrolysis, the application of electricity to water to produce hydrogen, which is considered to be the greenest source of hydrogen. And so all of these different carbon intensities are under discussion these days, and most of the funds that are being deployed are being pushed towards the lower carbon intensity production mechanisms, whether that's blue or green hydrogen. So we're definitely seeing a lot of activity in that space and a transition from what some might call the dirtier forms of hydrogen production to the cleaner forms of hydrogen production.
When it comes to the green hydrogen, my understanding is that one of those barriers is just that the cost, and that the cost has gone dramatically down as greener sources of electricity or renewable sources of electricity have come to market. Have you seen that, and do you see the future in the near term being predominantly green hydrogen?
Well, I think there's a balance to be struck there. So the reality is that to produce the amounts of green hydrogen required is going to require a significant build out of electrolyzer infrastructure. So what you say is absolutely true. As the cost of renewables comes down, whether that's solar or wind, the use of that electricity to produce hydrogen becomes much more cost effective. And so we are definitely seeing those trends. And as more and more green hydrogen plants come on stream, we are seeing the trend towards that hydrogen price reducing. The reality of the situation is that it will probably take a decade or two to simply produce all of the electrolyzers we need to get that green hydrogen production fulfilling the requirement. And so in the interim, sources like the blue hydrogen or the carbon captured hydrogen from other sources are something that we need to be looking at and using so that this transition can move forward and so that it's not bottlenecked by the production of electrolyzers.
Every week on Someone Like You, we dive into stimulating conversations with founders, entrepreneurs, business owners, and the likes who are consciously and successfully creating sustainable business solutions for the long haul. Tune in every week for a new inspiring conversation on leading climate solutions. And if you're enjoying the podcast, don't forget, please subscribe on the platform of your choice and give us a rating and a review. Because it's a lot of infrastructure needs to change in order for hydrogen to, you know, we're speaking about diesel for these commercial vehicles to happen. So what type of infrastructure, you mentioned the infrastructure to create green hydrogen, but in terms of, you know, hydrogen being shipped around and in a place to be usable, what has to happen from an infrastructure perspective to make all this work as well?
Well, there are different approaches being taken. So I think there isn't one specific solution or one silver bullet with respect to this. So hydrogen can be moved around in pipelines, and there's work being done on that in certain jurisdictions where masses of hydrogen can be produced. Hydrogen can also be distributed through trucks, just like gasoline is today. So you'll see a truck driving down the road with gasoline or diesel on it. It's going to deliver to a fueling station. And then hydrogen can also be produced on site with electrolyzers. So a fueling station, many fueling stations in California, as an example, actually produce by electrolyzer the hydrogen on site and then dispense that hydrogen to others. So basically you get electrons moving to the fueling station, hydrogen is produced, and then that hydrogen is dispensed. And so there are really multiple routes. And what we're seeing in different jurisdictions is a selection of what makes the most sense for that particular jurisdiction. We're even seeing in Europe, in places like Germany, discussion of what you'd almost consider to be a microgrid hydrogen pipeline, where they have significant wind energy or solar energy resources deployed because of demand for that energy. A lot of that energy ends up being curtailed. And so what they're looking at is putting electrolyzers in place to use that curtailed energy to generate hydrogen and then distribute it in a more localized pipeline setup where that hydrogen can be used to either be returned to electricity to power buildings or used as fuel for vehicles on that microgrid. So what we're really seeing here is almost a digitization of the energy sector, and with hydrogen being an energy carrier that's quite efficient to use.
And when it comes to the price, and I don't know if it's sold in price per liter or how it's or gallon or how it's sold right now, what is the cost for a liter or a gallon or however you price it comparatively to something like a diesel? Is it 100% more? Is it 200% more? Or how close to is it to what we currently pay?
So hydrogen is priced on a per kilogram basis, just to deal with that. And right now, whether it's in California or Europe, at the pump, the price tends to be in around $13 US per kilogram. And so that compares to diesel. The parity point with diesel really sits around $7 or $8 per kilogram for most fuel cell systems, right? So right now that would mean that the fuel prices at the pump are approximately double the price of diesel. However, much of that is dependent on the fuel cell system or the engine that's used in the vehicle. And we just recently launched our product that we call the S1200, which is a 120 kilowatt system. And the efficiency of this particular system means that we believe we've achieved fuel cost parity with diesel at today's prices, And so that's a big advantage. Capital cost of the vehicles is still higher, but getting that fuel cost parity at today's prices is really important, because your biggest cost with commercial vehicles tends to be your fuel cost. And so very excited about what that product has achieved, and getting very positive response in the marketplace about it. And so we expect that advantage to continue to accelerate, because I think most people's expectations is that diesel costs will continue to go up. And certainly as mass production comes on stream and distribution gets more efficient, that hydrogen costs will come down. And so having that advantage will help us get to a total cost of ownership that really makes these vehicles truly cost competitive with today's diesel vehicles.
And your products that you've developed, that you're just speaking about, are they used as retrofits, or are they used for new vehicle creation? So when a company's developing a new vehicle, they could use Loop's energy system, or can it also work when a company wants to retrofit a fleet of vehicles? How does that work?
Well, our focus is making the most impact from a climate and emissions perspective that we can. And so we're focused on new vehicle designs. We engage with vehicle manufacturers, many of whom already have a battery electric version and are seeing demand from their customers for a hydrogen fuel cell version. And we have what we believe is the fastest path for them to a hydrogen vehicle. And so those are the companies we work with. They are new vehicle designs almost entirely. And we're not focused on the retrofit side of things.
So how does Loop grow, market itself? Obviously being an energy company, is it a fairly large, sales team? Like, how have you taken it from, where you've been involved obviously for 10 years? So what does the future look like over the next kind of 3 to 5 years, and how does Loop grow and market itself to get your products into these new manufacturers?
Well, we take a direct sales approach into the vehicle manufacturing space. So we have a sales team that operates in Europe and North America. We've got a sales team in China as well. And so we go direct to the vehicle manufacturers. We offer them a fuel cell engine solution that they can integrate very quickly into their system. What we've seen is significant increase in market activity in Europe. I mentioned that climate change is one of the key drivers that we're seeing that is really creating market pull. The other driver that we've seen this year with Russia's invasion of Ukraine is that energy security has now come onto the table, and hydrogen as a key solution to energy security issues in Europe. And so we've seen a significant uptick in customer activity with respect to fuel cells in the European marketplace this year that has caused us to increase our guidance to the market in terms of what we expect the market activity to look like over the next couple of years. With the implementation of the Inflation Reduction Act in the United States, there's a very strong focus in that on reducing the cost of hydrogen through production tax credits. And like other markets where we've seen that focus on increase of hydrogen production, reduction of cost, there's a follow-on effect of demand for vehicles, which creates demand for our products as well. And so we're expecting over the next year or two that we should see a similar sort of activity in the States as what we've seen in Europe. And so that direct sales approach is working very well for us. We've grown the number of vehicle manufacturing customers that we have over the last 2 years from 1 to almost 20. And so we've seen a great growth in our customer base, and we've seen a correlating growth in the demand for our product.
You mentioned that your products are being manufactured in Vancouver currently. Is that the kind of continued plan as you scale over the years as well?
Well, we see Vancouver as always having a manufacturing operation in it and a production operation in it. We expect that we will establish local production facilities in around the world for a number of reasons. One is that, you know, these are large pieces of equipment. It can be costly to ship them around the world as volumes scale. And so as that scale requirement develops, it makes sense to establish manufacturing in those different jurisdictions. The other reason that we see the path to establishing multiple manufacturing locations is, you know, we're clearly geopolitically in a deglobalization phase right now. And so countries and around the world are very focused on what's the benefit to their own economies. And that is going to drive the establishment of manufacturing facilities in specific geographic regions to supply those markets. And so, you know, Vancouver will continue to be the center of excellence for the development of production and manufacturing techniques. But then those will be transferred to other locations where we'll establish manufacturing for more localized distribution.
When it comes to funding, obviously you are a public company. When did you become a public company and how was the business funded early on in the earlier part of the business?
Well, we went through three very distinct phases as a company with respect to funding. So, you know, we talked about the fact that, you know, in the 2000s and sort of early 2010s, there wasn't this same kind of industrial or institutional focus on climate change solutions. And so for that first 15 or 16 years of the company's existence, most of the funding came from individual investors. So friends and family of the founder, high net worth individuals who believed in what the company was doing and saw the economic opportunity. And so we raised during that course, and of course, government funding as well. So the government of Canada through various programs, whether that's IRAP or SR&ED tax credits or SDTC, there was a sizable grant there. But about $25 million of funding came from those sources in the first part of the company's existence. And then in 2019, the first strategic investor that Loop had invested, Cummins, actually made a first investment in the fall of 2019 and a second investment in the spring of 2020. And so those investments were very helpful and really marked the first professional investment round. And then we did do an IPO in February of 2021. And we raised $100 million in that round. And that was primarily institutional investors with about a 20% retail component to it. So I would say, you know, the funding for Loop over the years has come from quite a broad set of investors. And we continue to see, you know, strong interest from strategic investors. And there are a lot of institutions that are focused on hydrogen as well. So we're now a public company and we operate within that realm.
Well, hydrogen to me seems, I've heard it and did a little bit of research also on it when you think about airplanes as well, it's the same predicament that you touched on, just the weight of a airplane and getting it into the air. And, you know, hydrogen looks to be the fuel of the future and the fuel of the future being a green energy future. And there's a lot of, you know, similarities to, as you mentioned, what's happening right now between how you use diesel. And so it's really fascinating. And I think that it's obviously a considerable opportunity. We're close to the end of our time. So I just have a question around just broadly, you know, speaking about climate, you know, yourself and your wife, you've talked about how many years you've been in climate. And I'm a fan of this book, The Lorax. I have three young kids and I often read this book. And then I read an interesting article that, you know, Dr. Seuss kind of called climate change 50 years ago when he wrote this book, The Lorax. But this book is about overusing our resources, which we obviously have. And, you know, at the end of this book, it's a, you know, the child gets a seed and, you know, that person can change that outcome. And I think a lot of people, when they're listening to a show like this and they're listening to somebody like yourself, what they're really looking for is understanding how can they be involved? And if that's being involved as an individual or being involved as an individual in terms of your career or, you know, being an individual that wants to invest in companies like Loop Energy, what would you say for people to do towards that kind of first step towards change?
Well, look, I guess if I was to simplify it a little bit, we've all kind of got three spheres of influence that are relevant to that question, right? So there's what we personally consume in our day-to-day lives, and there are decisions that we can make with respect to what we're willing to consume and what we can do to improve things. So as an example, I'm CEO of a fuel cell company, but I'm not particularly fuel cell agnostic. I drive a battery electric car, right? I think it's a great choice. I drive a Nissan Leaf. It's not particularly fancy, but it's a fabulous commuter car. It gets me to and from work. It's super convenient. My wife drives a plug-in hybrid. And so those are personal decisions that we have made because, you know, as we go about our daily business, we want to minimize our footprint. And I think, you know, some people can afford battery electric cars, others can't, but there are decisions that we can make in our own personal lives to manage our personal carbon footprint. And so that's one sphere that we can operate in. The second sphere is what we do for work. And, you know, my wife and I made the decision to change careers and to move ourselves into a position where we felt that the work that we were doing was making a contribution towards solutions. Some people can do that. Not everybody can. But there's no question that at work, whether you work for a green energy company or a clean energy company or any company, again, not unlike the personal sphere, all of us have a degree of influence over the decisions that are made in our workplaces. And we can influence the direction of the company to varying extents. And so I would always encourage people to use their influence in those companies to effect positive change. And for those who want to make career decisions and move into the clean energy space or, you know, food science space, it's an area that's, you know, has a critical impact on climate change and clean energy for all of us. I just encourage people to follow their dream there and really, you know, be willing to take that risk and step out into the career. And then the third sphere is any additional resources that people may have been, that you may have access to, and there are varying degrees of that for people. Some of your listeners probably are invest in the market. Others may not have the resources to do so, but being thoughtful about where we invest those resources to try to achieve not just a financial return, but, you know, a financial return is obviously important. Finding ways to get additional returns outside of the financial side of things is also important. And there are a lot of companies out there that are doing very well, that will perform well in the long run from a financial perspective, and are also doing great things for the planet. And so we just encourage those of us who have those resources to focus those in on areas where there's more than just a financial return.
Well, Ben, thank you so much for your time and also for obviously making the consideration to spend your time and energy over all these years to fight the hard fight, because I'm sure, you know, 10 years ago, it's a very different place than what it is today, as you mentioned, the push versus the pull. And so how can people find information about either yourself or Loop Energy, and how can they follow what you're doing?
Well, so Loop Energy is easy. Our website is loopenergy.com, and we've got various newsletters, investor newsletters, information that you can sign up for. There's lots of information on the site that you can use to learn more about Loop. If you follow us on LinkedIn, again, look up Loop Energy. You can follow us on LinkedIn. You'll get notifications of all the latest announcements. And then, of course, I'm also obviously on LinkedIn, and people can follow me there as well, if they're so inclined. But those are the best ways to keep in touch with what we're doing.
Thanks, Ben. Best of luck to everything that you and your team is doing.
Well, Marco, thank you very much. Really appreciate you taking the time to learn more about us and sharing about Loop with the audience. And I'm looking forward to the coming years.
Thanks, Ben. This podcast is co-produced with The Brand is Female. I hope you've enjoyed today's episode of Someone Like You. And if you did, please share this. We're a new podcast, and I would love it if you could share it with a family member, friend, colleague, work colleague, share it on Slack, whoever you do, just share and spread the message of these incredible brands. Please also support these type of companies. They're doing the hard thing, and the hard thing often takes a lot of people to get on board. And don't forget, please subscribe on the platform of your choice and give us a rating and review. I'm Marco Pimentel. Thank you for joining us today. For more information on Someone Like You, you can find us on Instagram at Someone Like You Podcast, with all the links to the podcast, our website, and more information about the brands that we feature. Thank you again.